This is Henry Simon, bringing you another story from my files here at the Missing Persons Bureau.
In these stories of the Missing Persons Bureau, dramatized for Henry Simon by Ross Napier, names and addresses have, for obvious reasons, been changed. In one moment, the search for Ellen Sweeney, address unknown. And here again is Henry Simon.
While I was walking down Regent Street the other afternoon, I happened to pass under a ladder, which was resting against the awning of a well-known London department store. As I did so, it occurred to me that I was tempting fate, especially as I just spilt some salt on the breakfast table that very same morning and hadn't remembered to throw a pinch of it over my left shoulder. However, to date, I've encountered no serious misfortune, touch wood, so, of course, I'm not unduly worried. By the same token, there are a great many people I could name who, under similar circumstances, would be quaking in their shoes, just waiting to be enveloped by the evil forces which they had conjured into being. I count myself fortunate, therefore, that I'm not a superstitious man, and am never likely to be. If I were, indeed, I should most certainly have regarded the case of Ellen Sweeney in a very different light. But that is something which you must judge for yourselves as I unfold it to you. An unusual story that had its beginning for us here at the Missing Persons Bureau on the morning in the July of 1953, when I was visited in my office by a tall, sallow-faced man who introduced himself as Oswald Sweeney, and whose age I estimated to be somewhere in the vicinity of 40.
Good of you to see me at such short notice, Mr. Simon. I thought perhaps you might be too busy to fit me in.
On the contrary, I have a relatively free morning. Two appointments have been cancelled at the very last minute, and a luncheon engagement has been postponed. In fact, you couldn't have chosen a more opportune time.
Well, that's something anyway. Cigarette?
Thank you, no. I'm strictly a pipe smoker.
You don't mind if I...
Not at all. Allow me.
Thank you. I used to smoke a pipe myself. Unfortunately, it gave me indigestion. Had to give it up. Now I'm smoking 40 of these things a day, and I'm off my food. Haven't enjoyed a meal in months. But I didn't come here to discuss my appetite. I came because Ellen's left home and I want her found.
Ellen?
My wife. She's been gone 5 days now, not a word.
Gone? From where?
Our home in Harrow.
Have you been married long?
Just 3 years. It was our third anniversary.
On the day she left?
Yes. I had a present for her, a gold wristlet watch. Bought it in town that same morning. She'd always wanted one. I have it with me now, as a matter of fact.
You didn't give it to her?
I didn't have a chance. When I got home from work, she was gone.
Ah, I see. Well, it's certainly a very nice-looking watch.
It ought to be. Cost me 26 guineas. A good deal more than I could afford. The point is, it wasn't only our anniversary. It was her birthday as well.
I see. So you had occasion for a double celebration.
Some celebration.
You didn't think of contacting the police?
I thought about it, yes. But, well, I didn't want to risk letting it get in the newspapers. Besides, I was so sure she'd be back.
Has she ever gone away like this before?
No, never.
Tell me, was her relationship a happy one?
Very happy. Oh, so I thought.
You didn't have an argument or anything like that?
The only argument we ever had was about me not eating enough.
Oh?
That was weeks ago.
So at the time of her departure, you were actually on the very best of terms?
The best possible terms, yes.
You had no children?
No. We did have a baby son.
Yes.
Died when he was only 3 days old.
Oh. How long ago was this?
A year last March.
I see. Presumably the loss affected your wife deeply?
For a while it did, but she got over it. Or seemed to, anyway. She's known a good deal of unhappiness in her time, what with one thing and another. About a year before that, her parents' home caught fire. She was staying with them at the time. I was away on business. Well, to cut a long story short, some neighbors managed to drag her clear, just in time to see the roof cave in on her mother and father and her younger brother, Ted. They were burnt to death, the three of them. And all Ellen could do was stand there and watch.
Mm.
Then a few years before that, she was in a motor accident with her sister. She was thrown clear. The sister was pinned under the steering column. Died before they could get her out. And if that wasn't bad enough, then to be followed by... Yes, Mr. Simon, she's had more than her share of tragedy, has Ellen.
I see. You saw her last on the morning of her disappearance?
Before I left for work.
And when you got back that evening, she'd gone?
Yes.
She left no message, no sort of explanation?
None.
Did she take anything away with her in the way of money or clothing?
One of the suitcases had gone from the cupboard, so she must have taken something. As for money, she'd have had about £10 in the house.
Does she have access to a bank account?
No. The only account we have is in my name.
Is she fitted for any special type of work or profession?
Well, she was a stenographer before we were married.
Yes, a stenographer. Mm-hmm. How old is she, by the way?
To be exact, 33 and 5 days.
Has she any close relatives?
An uncle in Scarborough. I checked with him. He hasn't heard from her.
No one else?
Not to speak of, no.
How about friends? Is there anybody she might have contacted?
No one that I know of. She wasn't fond of mixing socially.
Hmm. Well, now, harking back to the morning of her departure, how did she seem then?
Oh, much the same as usual. Quiet. She never had a great deal to say for herself at breakfast.
I take it that you've been in touch with the neighbors?
I've checked with them, yes.
Did no one see her leave the house during the day?
No.
What made you wait so long before you took action?
Well, as I said, I was so sure she'd be back.
Mm-hmm.
I was at a loss to know what I should do. I certainly didn't want the police interfering, and, well, I just kept waiting and hoping till a friend advised me to come to you.
Did it occur to you that she might have suffered a mental lapse of some kind?
Mental lapse?
In the face of so much tragedy, she might very easily have had a sudden breakdown.
In other words, lost her reason. Is that what you mean?
Mm-hmm. Her reason or her memory.
But it's over 2 years since the fire, and a year since we lost our son. If it was going to happen, wouldn't it have happened sooner?
Not necessarily, no. Could be a sort of delayed reaction.
But it... You think I should have called in the police, don't you?
It's not for me to say what you should have done. It might have helped matters if you acted a little more promptly, you know.
I realize that now, but... Well, it's easy to be wise after the event.
Yes, true.
You will take the case, though?
Tentatively, yes. But only on the understanding that in the event of our failure to locate her by the end of the week, you will authorize us to place the matter in the hands of the police.
I'll do whatever you advise.
Fine. Now, if you'll just give me one or two more routine particulars, I'll put a man in the job straight away.
Yes?
Oh, Mr. Sweeney?
Yes.
Paul Studdy, Missing Persons Bureau. I just dropped by to take a look over the house, if that's okay with you.
Of course. Mr. Simon said you'd be coming sometime this afternoon. Fortunately, I was able to arrange time off work, so I can show you around. Please come in.
Oh, thanks.
I expect you'll want to see the bedroom first. Most of my wife's belongings are there.
Before I do, I'd just like to clear up one small point. Street number of this place is 28A.
That's correct.
Well, why is that?
Why?
Oh, well, as I came in, I happened to notice that the house on either side of you is numbered 28 and 32, respectively. Well, it seems logical, then, that you should be number 30, but instead you're 28A. Struck me as kind of curious.
Well, as a matter of fact, that was my wife's idea.
Oh?
She doesn't like the number 3. She says it's unlucky for her.
Unlucky?
She's rather superstitious, you see.
But it wouldn't be 3, it'd be 30.
The mere fact that there was a 3 in the number upset her. Ridiculous, but there it is.
Yeah. So you just had it changed, eh?
Yes.
She's always been this superstitious?
Ever since I've known her, acutely.
Funny. Never heard of 3 being unlucky before. It's usually 13.
Not to Ellen. Just 3. She calls it the devil's digit.
Yeah, the whole house, Chief. I combed it from top to bottom. Every room, every closet, every drawer.
With what result?
Well, I'm not sure yet. I'm still trying to figure it.
Oh?
I've never known anybody to be so affected by an ordinary old numeral before. Like I said, the number of the house had been changed because there was a 3 in it. But it doesn't stop there, no, not by a long shot. Every 3 in that house has been obliterated, either cut out altogether or scribbled over in pencil. She hasn't missed one. Magazines, books, they've all been gone through.
Books?
Yeah, the page numbers. Every 3, every multiple of 3, every number with a 3 in it. All of them penciled over. Even the calendars on the walls have undergone the same treatment.
The odd Sweeney didn't mention all this when he was here.
Well, struck me he was kind of embarrassed about it. I guess he figured it might have given us the wrong impression, especially as you'd already raised the possibility that the woman might be mentally unstable. The thing is, he maintains that apart from that one quirk, she's always been perfectly normal in every respect. Well, that's what makes me think it might have something to do with her disappearance.
What might?
Her fear of the number 3.
I'm afraid I don't quite follow.
Well, look at the facts, Chief. It was her 3rd wedding anniversary.
I hardly think that goes
as well as being her 33rd birthday. A coincidence, maybe. But nevertheless, a curious one. Particularly when one delves a little further into the woodpile.
You begin to intrigue me.
Well, their son died when he was 3 days old on the 3rd of March. And March being the 3rd month of the year.
But my dear Stanley...
And again, when the parents' home was burnt down, 3 people were killed. Now, of those, the father was age 63, the mother 53, and the brother 23. Moreover, although it wasn't March, it happened on the 3rd day of the month. And it was later estimated that the fire broke out at approximately 3 a.m. Now, sure, it's all coincidence, but to a highly superstitious woman, it could add up to a more significant thing.
Well, even so.
Then there was the sister who was killed in the motor accident. She was driving the family car. Mrs. Sweeney was beside her. They were rammed side-on by a truck.
Yes?
Well, I checked an old newspaper report. It listed the registration numbers of both vehicles.
And?
The truck's was PGR333.
Henry Simon returns to continue this story in just a moment. And here again is Henry Simon.
Studied reasoning was sound enough. On each occasion that tragedy had entered the life of Ellen Sweeney, the numeral 3 had been curiously featured. Was it not logical, therefore, to assume that Mrs. Sweeney, being a superstitious kind of woman, had regarded this as being something more than a coincidence, had indeed put particular emphasis upon it, which accounted, of course, for her terror of what she had come to regard as the devil's digit? And could this be linked with the fact that she had left home on the day of her 3rd wedding anniversary and 33rd birthday? The possibility could hardly be ignored. On the contrary, in fact, it was to form the basis of our search for the missing woman.
Okay, let's assume there is a tie-up. Let's assume she left home because, for some reason, she was scared of staying on, either scared for herself or scared for her husband. Let's assume that she felt she had to go.
We seem to be assuming a great deal.
Well, when you don't have anything else to work on, what's the alternative?
From that, I take it, you uncovered nothing further of any special interest.
Nothing of special interest now, except for a few old photos in the attic.
Oh, photos?
Yeah, shots of her and her sister as girls. Don't know who took them, one of the parents, maybe, or a friend. Well, anyway, I brought them back with me. There's 2, 3, 4, 5 of them.
All of the 2 girls, huh?
Yeah. Taken over a period of about 6 years, I'd say. You can see here in this one they're just kids, and in this they're quite grown up. Sister's the oldest by about 18 months.
Very interesting.
What?
Well, the girls themselves might have changed, but the background's exactly the same in all 5 snaps.
Oh, yeah, I noticed that.
Where were they taken? Got any idea?
Sweeney didn't know.
Funny. Those hills look strangely familiar. And the bay.
Probably they were holidaying there.
Which would indicate that they went to exactly the same spot every year.
Yeah, that's what I said to Sweeney, but he still couldn't enlighten me. He's got a hazy notion the parents used to have a weekender by the sea one time, but just where it was or what became of it, he hasn't got the foggiest idea. You're thinking she might have gone back there, is that it?
Well, as you know, Study, I've always been a firm believer in the idea that if cast adrift, people always find their way back to the place or places which have given them their very happiest memories. I've known it happen time and time again in similar cases.
Well, she certainly looks happy enough in these snaps.
If only I could place those hills. I'll swear I've seen them before, at some time or other.
Well, the negatives are here. Maybe if we haven't blown up, it might help.
Good idea. You might use one of your contacts in the photography business, eh?
Yeah, take him to Jack Cairns up in the Strand. He'll do the job.
didn't know you better, Paul, I'd say you were pulling my leg. This is the dullest batch of enlargements I've ever done. Who are the females, anyway?
Oh, nobody you'd know, Jackie boy. But do you recognize the scenery at all?
Looks like part of the Cornish coast.
Yeah, could be. But which part?
Yeah, there you had me. I'm so busy here, I never get a chance to. Well, to get that far out.
Hey, now, wait a minute. There's something I didn't notice before.
What?
The boat shed.
Boat shed?
Yeah, you see on the far side of the bay?
What about it?
There's a name written on the roof. I can't quite make it out. Can you blow these things up any further?
Not without losing the picture altogether.
Well, I'm not worried about the picture, but I just want the name of that boat shed. Have you got a magnifying glass?
Yes, you should have. Somewhere here. Yeah. Here we are.
Yeah, thanks. And let's see. F, is it? Yes, F, B, no, F, F, R, F, R, F, R, A.
Looks like an N or an M, eh?
Yeah, and then a K. F, R, A, N, K. Frank.
Brilliant, brilliant. Frank what?
All right, don't rush me. Let's see, there's B, B, A, B, A, X.
T.
Yeah, T, E, R. Baxter, Frank Baxter.
Yeah, son, boats for hire.
Clear as daylight. All I've got to do now is locate Baxter's boathouse, and I'm in business.
Hmm. Yeah, if it still exists. That snap was taken at least 15 years ago.
Well, just a case of digging deep enough. It'll be on record somewhere.
And to think when I was a kid, I always wanted to be a private investigator.
What changed your mind?
My father bought me a camera. Too bad yours didn't do the same.
Yeah, Study.
P.S.W. Travelers Association here. Mr. Study, British speaking.
Oh, yeah?
You were inquiring earlier into the whereabouts of a certain boat hiring concern.
Baxter's Boat Shed, yes.
Yeah, well, the name I have here is Frank Baxter and Son.
That's the one. Is he still operating?
According to my information, yes. Has been for the past 25 years. At present, it's controlled by the...
Oh, you can forget that side of it. All I want to know is where it is.
Oh, yes. Well, it's in Horton Bay.
Horton Bay?
On the northeast coast, just a few miles south of Whitby.
Horton Bay. But of course I knew the scenery was familiar.
Oh, don't tell me you used to spend your holidays there, too.
A little fishing up there some years before the war. It's a glorious spot. Just the sort of place I'd like to retire to.
Fair enough. If you ever disappear, I'll know where to look.
Despite our progress, we were still very far from confident that we were on the right trail. Indeed, our investigations were based entirely on guesswork, and pretty flimsy guesswork at that. Needless to say, we lost no time at all in contacting our client, who seemed to think his wife might well have returned to the scene of her earlier and happier days, but could tell us nothing further, nor could he suggest any method of approach. So it was that the following day, Study travelled to Whitby on the coast, which is some 200 miles north of London. And he completed his journey to the small township of Horton Bay in a local bus, which dropped him right at the front entrance of the Carlton Arms Hotel in the main street, opposite the bay. From where he stood, he could see the hills beyond, bathed in the glow of the setting sun, and some 300 yards to his right on the water's edge was Baxter's boat shed, unchanged except for an extension to the wooden jetty which adjoined it. At the hotel reception desk, the agent questioned the clerk on duty, who was an elderly, bespectacled sort of man, in a tired grey flannel suit.
Sweeney? No, there's no one here by that name.
Well, she might have registered in her maiden name, Preston.
No, no Prestons neither.
I've got a picture over here.
Oh, you don't give up easy, do you?
Well, I found it pays to be difficult.
No, never seen her before.
Yeah. What other hotels are there in town?
Only at Winchester, down the road.
Yeah, I'll try there. By the way, I'll be needing a room for the night. Any vacancies?
Sorry, not one. We're full up. I wouldn't be surprised if the Winchester isn't pretty full, too. It's the busy season. Should be offering something, though, as long as you're not too choosy. Like that one we had here a few nights back. Come in late, she did. Wanted a single. I wasn't on duty at the time. Fred Baker was here. He told me about it later. Anyway, like I said, the lady wants a single, and it just happens we have one. Just one. Only one room left in the place, so Fred takes her up. Well, he gets as far as the door, and all of a sudden, like, without even having a look inside, she says she doesn't want it. Fred tells her it's the only one going, and one of the best at that, but it don't make no difference. She picks up her bag and shoves off, without so much as looking at it. There's no accounting for some people.
No, I guess not. Which one was it, as a matter of interest?
Which one?
Which room?
Oh, head of the stairs, number 3.
That's right, sir. Mrs. Ellen Sweeney, second floor, room 11.
Yes? What is it?
Good evening, ma'am. I wonder
if you mind... There must be some mistake. I don't know you.
No, ma'am, but your husband does. He sent me here. Paul Study, Missing Persons Bureau.
Ellen Sweeney made no attempt either to deny her identity or to prevent Study from entering the room. She simply shrank away from him, cowering against the wall like a frightened animal, her eyes wide, her lips drawn back in an expression that hovered between dismay and desperation. Then abruptly, her hands fell limply at her sides, and the fear departed from her eyes, leaving in its wake only moisture.
You shouldn't have come here. My husband should have known better than to send you.
He's mighty anxious about you, ma'am. He wants you back home.
No, I can't go back to him, ever.
You mind telling me why?
Because I don't want anything to happen to him, like it has to everyone else who's ever meant anything to me.
Meaning your family?
My mother and father. My brother and sister. My son. They're all dead. Dead because of me. Oh, but how can you be expected to understand? You know nothing. Nothing at all.
Well, maybe I know a lot more than you give me credit for. For instance, I know you've got some kind of a bug about the number 3. I know it's been coincidental with much of the tragedy in your life. I also know that you're 33 years of age and that you left home on the day of your 3rd wedding anniversary, presumably because you were scared that such a combination of 3s might lead to further tragedy. Am I right?
I love my husband. Isn't it natural I should want to spare him?
Spare him from what?
From whatever evil force it is that... No. No, my reasons for leaving him weren't entirely unselfish. I came away because I'd reached the end of my rope. Because I couldn't stand the strain any longer. Oh, don't you see? I had to go. I had no choice.
And you came here because
I came here in the hope that... that I might find something of what I'd known here before. Some small part of life as it used to be. So long ago, it seems now. So very long ago.
Well, take it from me, ma'am. You'll never catch up with it this way. But it's not my place to argue with you. For better or for worse, my job's done. I was retained to find you. I've done that. Now the ball's with you. You've got to find yourself.
Henry Simon returns to conclude this story in just a moment. And here again is Henry Simon.
Despite the fervent pleas of her husband, Ellen Sweeney did not return home, nor was she destined ever to do so. For 2 months later, her body was found on a deserted beach near Scarborough. The verdict brought in at the subsequent inquest was death by drowning. The evidence pointed to suicide. But as this could not be established, accidental death was recorded. And now, this is Henry Simon, inviting you to meet me here again, and for the present, bidding you au revoir.